This is lecture number 4 of A Day with John McMaster, Sunset Room, Ambassador Hotel, Los Angeles, September 20th, 1970, entitled Communication. Copies are available from the Association of International Dianologists, 1700 Westwood Boulevard, Westwood Village, California, 90024, area code 213-474-1565.
Thank you, Jack. There are just some things I'd like to go briefly through so that I didn't make it quite clear. When I was talking earlier about, you know, getting here and getting shot at and so on, then I said to the final stage when everyone agreed and I agreed and so on, then there was no shooting. The point I wanted to, that was important there was, I had not, in actual fact, communicated enough. Did I get that point across when I said it?
Yes.
Ah, good. I just didn't want to leave that sort of hanging like someone was wrong. It was, if I had that awareness, then I better get it across. So somebody said to me just a little while ago, just before I left New York in December, I was sitting up at Bernie Green's place and we were having a chat, and it was John Seffen, actually, Bernie Green's lawyer. Said, John, when are you going to accept that you are thousands of years ahead of your time? And I looked at this, you see, and it didn't strike me as right. Anyway, I didn't have any immediate reply. And so I wanted to sort of have a look at it, but he said, will you accept that you are thousands of years ahead of your time? So finally I said, all right, I'll accept it, and left it at that. Then when I was on this little ship leaving New York, and I had lots of time to myself, I began to write some very simple axioms, just as simple as I could make them. And when I came to the final axiom, I was about to write, which I have said in many lectures, know the truth, or know thyself, and the truth shall set ye free. I've quoted it so often, and suddenly it wasn't true anymore. It was know thyself, and you shall set yourself free. And as I wrote that, I suddenly looked at this person saying to me, when are you going to accept that you are thousands of years ahead of your time? And I realized instantly that no one is less than time. And I wasn't thousands of years ahead of my time. Because if I had it, I could communicate it now in such a way that anyone could receive it. If I had it. If I didn't have it, well, I could masquerade as being thousands of years ahead of my time, and it's everyone else's fault because, you see, they didn't hear me. And it's not so. It was just suddenly in that, know thyself, and you shall set yourself free. And then suddenly this thing just came out. I'm telling you this because to me it was quite exciting. You know, to suddenly realize that this was a false statement. And every time they've said so-and-so is so many years ahead of his time, it isn't so. If the guy's got it, he can communicate it if he wishes to, so that it's acceptable. Now, some of you might have heard this before, and I said it on that radio show yesterday, in relation to communicating things. See, you've got in the structure of communication all sorts of things, a look, a smile, a touch, you know, words, singing, music, art, whatever you like is communication in its own way. So sound then becomes only one part of communication. Language is only one part of sound. So I was looking at all of this, you see, and we tend to make language the senior tool of communication, somehow or another. To this extent, of course, we are suppressing all the telepathic, all the flows, all the other things that we're generating to each other all the time. So I was invited to Paris one day by Mario Fenninger to come and lecture there. And when I arrived, just as I was going up onto the platform to lecture, Mario said to me, there are only 5 people in the audience who understand English. So I said, well, why? You know, why tell me that now? And then I looked at, well, I have never considered language should be a barrier. What does it matter what words I use? Do I have something that I want to get across to these people that I know they want? Do I have it? Because if so, the words would not be any barrier. They will just fulfill their purpose of relaying a concept and disappear, and there will be no mass. Let's see if what I know to be is so. So I stood up there and I lectured for, I suppose there were a couple of hundred people, and I lectured for about an hour and a half, and I watched the people all the time, and I watched the words disappearing and the room getting lighter and lighter, and I saw the people getting brighter and brighter. There's not being any bypass charge, there are no misunderstoods. And so, you know, this was what I was seeing. But even at the end, it's rather funny, I said to Mario, come up here and talk to them in French, because I still can't credit what I've seen. So he came up and he said to them in French, is there anything they wanted him to explain? He said, no, they didn't want him to explain anything. And then one old French woman right at the back, Rose Bronwyn, stood up and she said, in French, I do not understand one word of English, but I have understood everything that man said. And then the whole audience just broke up and said, formidable, 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 and they came running up, shaking my hand, and so on. Then they wanted to be audited by me, and they wanted all sorts of things. But like that isn't mine alone. It's not that I'm being the smart aleck in this. It's like, if I could hang on to my own knowing that language was no barrier, and that, you know, I, or me, I am that I am, this thing that runs this body, you know, that this had something to generate, to flow, to get across, to have duplicated on that side, and nothing could be a barrier to that duplication, the fact that I stood there and just didn't relay it silently, it was like I was using the normal, you know, the normal sort of approach, and the sound was coming out of this body, and it was coming out in words, and it was going across to the people. Well, that then indicated to me, and I had real, what I had known to be in my own rationale. You know the way one works things out, and maybe you never put them to the test. Well, I wasn't intending to put anything to the test, but it just so happens I found myself in that position where this happened. So I saw for the first time that happened. It is true. Language is no barrier. So then I went off to Copenhagen. And I lectured there for about 2 weeks with the same sort of thing happening. Except that more people could speak and understand English, but the same sort of thing happened, and all these people who couldn't speak a word of English kept coming and coming and coming. And the audiences got bigger and bigger and bigger. And so this was quite early in 1966, this became a reality for me, and a reality for those other people too. Then last year, the year before last, I was passing through New Zealand, and I was lecturing, and some Maoris came. Now, I am not in structure anything like a Maori. This body isn't anyway. And neither was the language I was speaking. But for thousands of years, the Maoris have been waiting for what they call the Tukadi, or the white heron. That being which is going to come in as a spirit, fly in but once, and deliver a message of spiritual freedom, and go. I felt a little bit sad when they told me it was only once. And they must be there to recognize and anoint this person and receive the message. And after they had heard me lecturing, they asked if they could anoint me as the Tukadi, or the white heron. And they didn't even understand the language, but something went across. So in the City Hall in Auckland in February 1968, I was duly anointed as the Tukadi, or the white heron, the bringer of the spiritual message that they'd been waiting for so long. Then I looked at all of these things, you know, as I review them now. And Jack's got some processes on wonder, and I don't know what they are, but you know, I look at it and it's in wonder at what we really are, each of us. And how, when you reach a certain stage, you can move in peace anywhere. You know, you just can move in peace anywhere, but not only just in peace. It's like if you have something, it moves across. And you see, I should have recalled that instantly when this person in New York said to me, when are you going to acknowledge that you are thousands of years ahead of your time? I should have recalled it, but I didn't. And it was only as I was on the ship and quietly putting myself together again, and writing up what I considered were basic axioms for existence, as simple as possible, removing all the complications that I would have considered complications and that man could discover or not as he chose in his own time as complications, because I'm currently writing a book which is just simply a letter to mankind, and its preface is these axioms, and this goes in at the beginning. The basic simplicity as one gets to the basics of what one is, until, you know, telepathic communication or telepathic auditing is no problem at all. If I hear that someone is having a bit of a problem, or I pick up that someone's having a bit of a problem, some far corner of the earth, I sit down on my e-meter, and I just connect in with that person, and instantly I see that, and then it's no longer me reading on the meter, because at that particular time my body is a totally cleared relay point. And then I check what is the matter on that, with that person, wherever that person is. And gradually we handle the ARC breaks, or the upsets, if you like, and get to what it is and find out, is this process out, is that process out, is that process out, and you get one, you run it. And you run it till, and something happens somewhere. And somebody feels a little bit better for it. And again, this is not a matter of being very clever. It's so simple and so easy, it's just a matter of knowing what you know and just going ahead and doing it. I know in one case, my father was getting to a stage where too many people were coming to the house, and it was too much randomity for him, and it's his home and it's not mine. And I began to resist this. And as I began to resist it, of course, it was making more difficult for him. So one night someone was coming, and he was really in a state of fury about people coming to his home, because he wasn't used to that number of people coming to his home, you see. So I didn't want to upset him. It was the last thing on earth I wanted to do, and of course, because I was resisting upsetting him, it was happening. Anyway, I decided one evening someone was coming for auditing, and the person was going to arrive at about 7:30, so I got home from work at about 5:30, and I thought, well, I better just quickly handle this situation. Now, my father he plays golf fairly regularly during the week. He's 73 years old, and he's pretty fit. And he, after golf, of course, they go to the 19th hole, and they have their odd spots and so on. So it wasn't possible for me to go and say to him, come, let me audit you. In any case, I don't audit him unless he asks for it. And then he's got to stay off his spots for a day or two. And so I decided, well, if I audit him telepathically, it doesn't matter whether he's had any spots or not. So I went into my room and I closed the door, and I handled all his upsets. And this woman was coming at about, as I say, 7:00, 7:30 for her auditing. It took me about 20 minutes, half an hour, and I came out of the room and I said to my mother, well, I think everything will be all right tonight. So she said, why? So I said, well, I've just been auditing Dad telepathically. Let's just watch and see what happens. So the person arrived. And Dad, instead of going into his study and staying there in a roaring fury, heard the person arrive, came out and extended his hand and welcomed her and kissed her and said, oh, how lovely to see you. Now, you know, it sounds crazy, but it is so easy to do it. And suddenly I said, so I went to him the next day and I said, did something happen last night? He said, just before Ella arrived. I said, yes. He said, yes, I suddenly felt much better. So I said, well, then I better tell you what I'm doing, because I shall be doing a lot of it. And so I told him, and he suddenly felt so validated, you know, that I could tell him this, and he was just began to glow, you know. And Neville knows what it's like, somebody's been like sometimes, you know, resisting people coming to the house. But anyway, so now, you know, and if I did more of it, he would never be in that position at all. It's like his randomity tolerance would grow and grow and grow. Anyway, these are things that anyone can do. It isn't just, you know, like one person can do it. But if you feel doubtful about it, just get some more training or whatever, and know you can do it, and start doing it. And if you make a couple of mistakes, that's also all right. You know, until eventually you know you go where you want to go, because nothing can stop you from connecting to whoever you want to connect to, because you are connected to them anyway. All you're doing now is recharging the connection line. It's like between me and any one of you. And from here on out, There will always be this line. It will be like an inert telephone line. And one day, if you want to communicate with me, you just pick up the receiver and dial the number and boom! You know, it's like it's much faster than telephone calls and much cheaper. I know, for instance, you know, with the Scientology clearing course, which is a good one, people sometimes had difficulties, and to start off with, they would come to St. Hill, and, you know, when they were running all right, they were allowed to go home to any which corner of the earth they wanted to. And some of them, you know, had come and spoken to me in town, and I said to them, they said, well, what now? So I said, well, if ever you want me, just ask for me, and I'll be there. If ever you want me, and I'll be there. If you're having any difficulties or whatever, you know, and you haven't got anybody to review you, and my body happens to be another part of the planet, it doesn't matter, the planet's not that big. Just ask for me because you're connected to me and see what happens. And it's just quite amazing because all I wanted was for all of those people to win. I wanted them all to win as fast as they could win on that particular course. And you should hear the number of people that I have met in various far corners of the earth, including my mother. You said one day a TA was up, stuck high, and she was busy running the clearing course and so on, and she didn't know which way to turn next, and suddenly she said, John! And boom, down went the turn arm, the items began to clear, and she was off. But there are hundreds of people, and if it doesn't matter, you know, you don't have to be entirely conscious of it, because one's consciousness, to a large extent, is quite a limiting thing. You know, because one's constantly trying to relate it to a body, and maybe there's more of you than can actually be put through a body. You know, and there's no point in overstraining your body. And this is quite something, you know, there's much more of you. And it doesn't mean to say you don't need to acknowledge that there's all of you, and that you can be there. It's not that you're dividing yourself up into little fragments. It's just like you walk across the planet, or fly across the planet, and you're expanded and expanded and expanded, and you can expand more and more and more. And so, there are these little points, you know, that I, probably you're all aware of them. But I'm just saying them because they've been part of my way, which is the way that, you know, you allowed me to be and to go, that have sort of struck me as the road to effortlessness. And Ron, in his Class 8 course, Ron Hubbard in the Class 8 course, made one statement which absolutely delighted me. When he said, total power is total effortlessness. You know, where power is the effortless thing. Well, you don't have to put force and energy and charge and all these things on the line, anxiety. You just sit, you know, you just make yourself infinitely available and have the growing awareness of oneself as infinitely available. Now, that doesn't mean to say your body's infinitely available, and watch this one, because when I became the first clear on this particular regime of clears, and I realized that I had to do a lot, I had to go around the planet and I had to go and communicate it, and I had to go and, you know, confirm something that people had picked up on the wavelengths anyway, I sort of said to myself, right, well, now if you have accepted this, you will have to be infinitely available. And immediately I had a collapse of me and my body. And I had this idea that I had to have my body infinitely available, you see. And if anybody wanted to hug me or love me or have me there or have me there or have me somewhere else, I had to be available. And this was getting to a stage where it was almost intolerable for my body. And suddenly I realized that I had collapsed the issue. I was going to be infinitely available, not my body. And so, gradually, I separated this out until I could be infinitely available without having to strain my body at all. I hope that makes a little bit of sense. So, you know, in the whole evolution of man, when you look across at presidents trying to run a nation, trying to govern, look at prime ministers, and you look at all the little things that are supposed to be the problems, the trials, the tribulations, the decisions they have to make, and so on, then you begin to realize that there's something you can do to help. You see, like, you can just reach out there, and the guy you know is basically good. You know he wants to be on purpose, your president or your congressman or your governor or whatever. You know he wants to be, you know, on purpose and helping the nation to be happy. I was on a show in Washington, a television show, in which the interviewer was a long one, about 3 hours, and this interviewer was saying to me, but how can you be interested in human rights when you come from a country like South Africa? You know, with all its tremendous apartheid policies and things like that. So I said, well, what do you know about them? So he said, oh, I know quite a lot. So I said, well, where did you get it from? So he said, well, you got it from the newspapers and so on. So I said, well, do you consider that your source is reliable, that you've got all correct information? Because you just seem to have a lot of bad and no good. So he said, yeah, he felt quite happy about his source of information and so on. So I said, right, well, do you want me to comment on the South African government and whether I think it's right or wrong or whatever? And I said, I'm not in a position to. So he said, why not? So I said, because I don't know enough. I haven't got enough statistics at this time. So he said, what would you require? So I said to him, well, what do you say is the purpose of a government? What's its basic purpose? Why does man put it there? So he said, oh, to make laws, keep law and order, and so on and so on. So I said, right, well, what would it be doing that for? So he gave various reasons, and he didn't say what I wanted him to say. So I said, well, then, may I indicate something to you, you know, as a possibility? Would you say that the purpose of a government is that people shall become happier, not sadder? People shall become more successful, you know, and so all the attributes that go towards happiness. And he said, yes, yes, that would be a very good measure. So I said, right then, if you want to know whether the South African government is succeeding, then you go out to South Africa and you take a census of all the people, all colors of the nation, take a census of the number of people who consider themselves to be relatively happy. And then in a year's time, go back and take the same census. And if the proportion of happy people has increased, the government is succeeding. If it has decreased, the government is not succeeding. And that, so far as I know, is the only yardstick by which you can assess whether a government is succeeding or not. And he said, ah. So the reason why I said that is because you've got across your nation now various things that are happening that are making it difficult, say, for President Nixon to fulfill his purpose line of a happy people right across the whole of the United States. And basically, whether he has looked at it that way or not, you can know for yourself that he has no intention that the people of the United States should be unhappy, because he would like to move on to wherever he moves, you know, from, say, the next, with this body, and then with another body, and with another body, and behind him he would like to leave no charge as the President of the United States, whether he analytically knows it at this time or not. And therefore, you know, one can look at, you might say, well, why do I want to do any telepathic auditing? Why do I want to do this, or why do I want to do that? Why is it necessary? Well, at this particular time, I think for all of us, the sooner we get, you know, to that, not to, you know, that stage or whatever, but to that certainty of knowing that you can do it, the sooner one gets there, the sooner one can help these people, and then the sooner you can help all the people around you. Because if you are doing something in an area which someone is trying to govern, and you do not tell that person, then you are leaving him constantly in a state of bypass. Now, when you bypass someone, the guy is feeling left out, and whatever happens, call it what you like. There is a dangerous condition there. You know, a dangerous condition is being generated because the guy is... Something's happening. See, if I sit here and I talk to Jack, see, and I talk very destructively about Ron Hubbard. See, and I'm talking about Ron Hubbard very destructively, not just stating isnesses, but with an intention that something shall go wrong with him. If I'm stating isnesses, it's okay. They erase, if they're exact. But if I'm really intending to hurt Ron Hubbard, then whether he is aware of it or not, that wavelength is going to hit him. And he's being bypassed, you see, because we're talking here. But it's going to generate and knock him. And he's going to pick up something that's going to create a danger situation. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Because it's generating, you see. So you can say what you like, really, and the more you say, the better. Because the more isnesses that you can describe exactly, the more are going to erase, you know, of unwanted conditions. But if one is saying something and intending another one harm, then the thing doesn't erase because it's got another, you know, something else there, like a confusion. Because you don't basically intend anybody harm. Anyway, these things have become realer and realer and realer to me. I remember Don Breeding, and some of you might know him. In 1966, I met him for the first time, and he was very upset about various things, and he wanted to have a long talk to me, so we drove down along the beach somewhere, and we drove for some way, and he was talking, and he was telling me about things that had gone wrong and so on, and I was listening and asking him about it and getting off as much as I could. And then he was talking about this and that and that, and then I indicated to him, and it was very real to him, you know, about, I said, it's fine for you to tell me these things, don't feel guilty, unless you actually want to harm the person you're telling me about. I said, do you? And he said, no. So I said, well, why feel guilty? Get off all the isnesses. I said, otherwise, you know, when you've got the doubt about why you are communicating, you are creating a danger condition for that person you're talking about. And if you don't want to do that, you don't have to. So it's just these little differentiations in relation to communication, where it has become confused to a large extent, where people will say, oh, that's your case, or that's natter, or that's that, or that's that. Meanwhile, it's not anything. It's not any of these things at all, because it wasn't your intention. But if you don't watch it, you can buy that it was your intention. Does that make sense?
Yes.
You see, like somebody, like I have said, you know, so many times, and I have given lectures in the organizations many times to the staff themselves across the world on ethics and so on, simply because you can see it being misunderstood and misapplied. And some guy is there, and he is legitimately furious about something he has seen. So they say to him, oh, that's your case. Go and handle your ARC break. You've got withholds. You know, handle your PTP or whatever. And I said, she used to say to them, listen, you know, if somebody says that to you, I want you to hold your ground and assess for yourself whether it's legitimate Thetan fury at what you are looking at or whether it is in actual fact an ARC break, a what, or what, or what, you know, whatever it might be. Because there is such a thing as straight Thetan fury. That is not case at all. You look at something, and it is not pleasing to you. Because you can see other people are unhappy. The indicators are out. And if somebody who's supposed to be better trained than you are, or somebody is using the technology to just as a weapon, and they say, oh, case, or whatever, you see, or ARC break, or upset, or withhold, and all you've got is just a clean, straight, nothing there, but you now doubt yourself because this guy's supposed to know more about tech than you do, and you doubt yourself instantly, you dramatize an ARC break, or a withhold, or a PTP, or whatever the rudiment might be. Whereas in actual fact, it was just a straight look at a condition that was totally unnecessary, and you became furious about it. And there is such a thing as just pure Thetan or spiritual fury. You are furious with no Q&A with the physical universe. And you haven't got any mass there at all. But if you are not sure of yourself, then somebody can put mass there. See, these are the, like I said before, I wish that some things had never been written, like Dubin. It just gives you more and more things to doubt yourself with. You see, if you see a picture, you see a picture. But if you say, well, no, that's Dubin, and so on, and so on, and so on, then when are you ever going to acknowledge that you see what you see? So the less of those, just, you know, the straighter you can be with yourself, then obviously the straighter you can be with everyone else. In relation to, you know, say the basics of man, the basic intentions of man, and so on, you look around the physical universe, and sometimes I think we don't realize that, say, in this building is the product of a person, maybe the architect's love. You look at that, you see. Because as people, you know, love and wish to communicate and reach out, so they are creative and communicate, and they communicate through the centuries with something, whatever it might be. Now you go back, you just go and touch any bit of this building, any bit of it. Just touch it and follow the lines from it. It's quite a good thing to do. Follow it, see where it takes you. And you'll get back to that as a particular source. And you'll go somewhere else, you go somewhere else, and you'll find yourself going way, way back. It's sort of like an unlimited thing where you can follow. Like what brought this building here, that we are sitting in today and generating a certain amount of love in, and that's generating not only just, you know, as far as this building can take it, but it goes on and on and on and on and on forever. And we are agreeing upon generating love so that man may be safe and creative right across the planet, no matter what ology or osophy or whatever he's involved in. You just generate it, and then it goes beyond there and beyond there and beyond there. But the point I'm trying to make is, here is a communication that probably comes from millions of beings way, way back who brought in their education, in their enlightenment, to a point where one person could pick up enough data to know how to make the concrete. And then people mixed the concrete. And whatever else goes into the reinforcing, whatever goes into the air vents, whatever goes into the lights, the electricity, the structure of the glass, the screws, the carpet, the chairs, and all the bits and pieces of the chairs, this microphone, this tape recorder, all of these things in this room right now, you can find the end product of man's desire to create for man. Man's desire to bring to man something that is worthwhile, a toy to play with, because man loves man. And so man's been doing this type of thing for man for so long. And you can go in there, and you know, I remember once in New York, I was getting out of an elevator, and I had my communicator with me at the time. His name was Bob James. And as I got out of the elevator, for the first time, I said thank you, audibly. You know, I just said thank you. Quietly, he heard me and he said, "John, you're nuts. You just said thank you to an elevator." So I said, "Oh, well, I better explain." I said, in that elevator, which contributes to our survival every day, going up and down, carting people around, increasing their velocity of action, getting them to where they want to get faster than they need to get without exhausting their bodies, running up steps. That elevator is the postulate and the creation of many, many beings. And that will stay in existence, I suppose, for as long, you know, as they have intended it to. But until there is a complete acknowledgement of the creation. And all I'm doing is saying thank you, and you watch what happens with that thank you. It generates bom, 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 and somewhere, no matter whether the guy's right at the other end of the universe, just a little warm glow comes in. And if we all did that, just acknowledge these little things, the lamppost outside, the flower in the garden, whatever, just these little warm glows will go across every line that's connected to that which is in existence now. And all of us doing this type of thing, suddenly the guy's feeling little warm glows. And whatever he might be up to at this particular time, you can't be hurting him. You're increasing his feeling of love and his reception of love. So it's just like a little thing, maybe, but it's, you know, if one walks around with the awareness of it and does it, good things happen. And you then become what you are, the real generators of love, the real generators of creation. Just recently in South Africa, we were talking about, somebody was saying to me, "Well, look, if you're duplicating that light over there, why doesn't it disappear?" She says, "I'm duplicating the light, why doesn't it disappear?" So I said, "Well, what is involved in the total duplication of that light?" And that is, all the people who had an idea that went into glass blowing, and then those who had the idea of structuring a structure that way, then those who had the idea of how to put the name and the voltage and the wattage underneath there, then those beyond Newton, who began to get the idea of electricity, and then all the beings before that who actually brought, you know, the vastness of electricity into existence, when all of that is acknowledged, that will be the duplication of that bulb or that light. That, not just looking at the shape, that's not a total duplication of anything. It is like all of what has got into it will be the total duplication of it. So until such time as we do that, the Earth's going to remain here. And even at some time when you can duplicate it all in totality, it doesn't have to disappear if you want it to stay. Because Ron said to me, 1966, know, when I met him in Salisbury in Rhodesia, and he said, the trouble with you, John McMaster, is that you work at such a velocity that there isn't going to be a single suppressive left in the physical universe in no time at all. So I said, well, that would be marvellous. So he said, will it? When there is no suppressive, John McMaster, there is going to be no physical universe, and that's all going to be your fault. So I looked at him and I said, why? I've already gone beyond the current axioms. This universe does not persist because of a lie for me anymore. It persists because I want it and others want it. It does not persist because of a lie anymore. It's like it was like that until I saw it another way. And suddenly I saw I wanted it. I wanted people to play their games. I wanted people to be happy. It was nice to see them having bodies and playing games with bodies and thoroughly enjoying themselves. And then I wanted them to be happier and happier and happier. And if we get the SPs not to be SPs anymore, then they'll all be happier and happier, and you know, they'll play higher and greater games. So anyway, I just said that to him. And there's one thing that might help you, because there's a lot of effort being put into interiorization, exteriorization, and all sorts of things. You know, it's like it's becoming a big problem and this and that and that, and if you don't exteriorize, you're nothing, or something. It's becoming a status symbol. Can you exteriorize or can't you? Well, now, I would like you not to have it as a status symbol at all, and not to have any problem on it whatsoever. But to realize this, whatever level you may be at or may not be at, if you haven't been aware of exteriorization or if you have been, don't think of it as getting outside of and leaving behind. Because, you see, you're getting, in order to handle this here, you become more expanded. And then as you become bigger, so you can handle that which is knotted here. You see, so you take this out, you look at it, and you free yourself. And so all the time, in order to look at this, you've got to get out to those viewpoints right across the universe that you have shut off, maybe, but are still there. So you shut them off for some reason or another, but they're still there and you're still connected to them. And all you've got to do is to recharge the line and you will be looking from there here, you see, and from here there. And then you will find that you're expanding and expanding and expanding and expanding all the time. And as well as being more and more here, you don't sort of like go unconscious here because you're on the moon. You are on the moon. You can do it right now. You can be here and you can be on the moon. And you can be watching this planet rotate. Just go up about 500 miles and be here at the same time. And go through all the color schemes of things and look at the planet. And just watch it rotating and watch the day and the night and look at it all. See, and it's quite easy to do that and be here. It's quite easy to move further than that. It's quite easy to go into the middle of the sun and be here. And look from there back here. Just look through it all. These things are no problem unless you will have it as a problem. So you don't have to stick in any of these places I've asked you to go. But you can remain there and be here and do as you choose. But one day I was having a talk with Ingo Swann. Some of you may or may not know him. He was out here. He did the briefing course. He was from the United Nations and he lives in Greenwich Village in New York. And one day last year, he's clear now, and he was talking about exteriorization in relation to a problem. And suddenly he was talking and thrashing it out, and I was just sitting there with him in his apartment, and he was thrashing it out, until suddenly he said, you know what? What is the trouble with us in Scientology? What we're doing wrong? He said, we've never realized that we're always trying to exteriorize from what we exteriorized into. You see, as you emerge from static, you exteriorize into the body you're animating. And now we're trying to exteriorize from what we exteriorized into without realizing that, you know, this process has actually taken place. Does this make sense? Anyway, he expressed it so beautifully that I decided to lecture on it in New York just shortly afterwards and say, this is what Inga Swann has contributed. You know, that we emerge from static into create, and that is exteriorization into what you're keeping in creation. Like this body of mine has got lots of atoms, and those bodies of yours have got lots of atoms and so on, and they're alive. If you took a carbon atom from this body and a carbon atom from this thing and you looked at them under an electron microscope, there would be no difference. Because the endowment of that type of life, you see, is always there. Because this thing is in existence because we've endowed it with existence. This body is in existence, and its atoms, carbon atoms, are the same as this lot's carbon atoms, but these carbon atoms are doing something else. They're moving, see? Moving. Something's moving this body. Well, maybe it's me. You know? But this is now, say, what makes a little bit different. So the atoms of this body have got something in them, holding them together in a certain sort of way, that this hasn't got. And so that is something that is being in creation all the time. And if you look at yourselves, really, you will find that you are always on a create, 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 all the time. You don't ever, and that is the senior thing that you are really on. Even if you get an idea sometimes that you're on destroy, or somebody gives you the idea about destroy. And, you know, and if you will just get words into perspective in relation to communication, then I don't think any word will ever hurt you again. Now, if you're just reading something, words aren't all that important. They can only be as important as you allow them to be. And so, more and more and more, what I'm working towards, what I said right at the beginning, there are these technologies and there is you. You are the senior thing. You can take the technologies, you can use them, and you can create and create and create for yourself what you will. And for me, it's like the Messiah that one seeks is oneself. And until such time as one acknowledges that, one will never be able to acknowledge another as his own Messiah. Because this idea of leaders, and only one person can blaze the trail. No one can blaze a trail for you. Someone can move somewhere, and it might become real to you, and then you want to move that way. But you've got to move that way. And you move that way in the discovery of yourself. And so more and more and more, you begin to see that you are your own Messiah. And you are the only one who can guide you, although some others might help in a way. Like a person puts a technology there and says, come and find yourself with this. And so the person finds himself with that by using it. And so you get this tremendous discovery of, you know, of oneself. Now, until such time as one really discovers oneself, there is not much chance of one fully discovering anything, fully discovering another, fully realizing the potential of another. And you see, it's like the half quote of love thy neighbor. But the other part of it is love thy neighbor as thyself. Because if you don't love yourself, well, there isn't anything at home with which to love another. You see, there's something else here, but there isn't anything there with which you can really love another. So then one must have a look at what is love. You see, and then find this out for oneself. I'm not going to tell you any more than I have told you about what I did in relation to, you know, what was left behind after I separated out all those things. And so I know that all of you have started moving, you've started helping many. And so I would like to thank you very, very much for your reach for me to bring this body here, even though I've never left California since I first arrived, which is a long time ago. It's like where one is, and you leave your, you know, you're around somewhere, floating where you have been. And I slipped a bit, you know, just a little bit, and that I let my shutters down when I went back to South Africa. And I didn't feel that I ever wanted to communicate again until I could say only that which would never create recrimination. And I wasn't sure that I had the ability to do that anymore. You know, it was sort of slipping away. So I'm very, very glad that you gave me this chance to come back physically and confirm what I know in relation to man, and that I'm all right. You know, I'm sort of not so bad as I might have been. That, you know, one could just every now and again slip off purpose, and you sort of just dot something a bit, but you're not in dot, you just dot something, and maybe it was the wrong thing you did. Maybe you were evaluating for people and saying this or that or that. Maybe it's just better to sit down and order people and let them discover everything for themselves. But then, somehow or another, I think it's okay to communicate now. And I would like to thank you very much for your tremendous reach and your tremendous reception of me, so that I can reinforce the purpose I was on and get back on the creation of the safe space and just reinforce it and keep on reinforcing it and realize now that I move not with a singular group, but I move with the whole of mankind, as you do, and I can just get busy and fulfill what I wanted to do anyway. And then suddenly we'll all just be there where we want to be, using whichever road we take, and all will be well, and it'll become very real that there are no enemies unless one creates them. So once again, thank you very, very much for having me here with you today. Thank you. Thank you all very much. We'll see each other again. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.